Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in communications with classes in online journalism, digital video production, interviewing, and crisis communications. strose.edu/grad.
And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway. The publisher, the professor, and the editor, that would be Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Hey. Lovely to be here.
Hey. It's just wonderful to see you. And the man making those little noises in the background is Professor Alan Chartok.
Do you mean the little man making
them? No. Misplaced adjectives. Let's see. I mean, you got me flustered here. The CEO of Northeast Public Radio, he is columnist, commentator, etc. And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. So here we are. Last week, we welcomed a couple of new stations.
We did.
Yeah.
Are they still with us?
Well, we don't know. We don't know if they've come back for a second round, but if we're in Eastern Illinois and other places, we'll know that they're still with us.
Well, let them know, give them some confidence that I wasn't on last week, and I bring a sense of balance and of reason to the program. So I don't know if that was missing last week, but we'll see.
If there's anything that could be said about you, it's that you bring reason and balance.
Yes, I am well balanced.
You're very balanced and very buoyant, I would say.
Yes, that's correct.
Just waiting for the moment.
Do you swim?
Less well buoyant than I used to be.
We're going to talk this week about Donald Trump, because there's been a lot of criticism of the media with regard to the coverage of Donald Trump. And I think that there's some question as to whether there's some validity to that. Are we, in fact, I say we, even though those of us sitting here don't have reporters on the trail in pursuit of Donald Trump, we're basically reusing content from elsewhere. Notwithstanding that, is the media in general, are the media giving too much attention to this guy? Are we being unfair to him?
Well, you know, we're probably the best public radio station in the country, WAMC. I don't want to pat myself on the back.
Now, you sound just like Donald Trump,
who is constantly telling us how smart he is. I know, but we are. But if Donald Trump comes to town, we're going to cover it. I'll tell you that right now. Why? Because people are interested. You know, the thing that gets me about you guys and the hypocrisy that goes on this show is that you forever are beating up, you know, us, the press, yourselves, for giving too much attention. You know what you do. Rex and Ira, both great editors. You know intuitively. Nobody has to tell you when a story is going to capture your audience. You're not going to bury it. You're going to play it, and because you know people are going to read the papers or listen to the radio because of it. Do we like the guy? No. He was bragging the other day that he hasn't had to spend a penny on his campaign yet, because he's been getting all of this free publicity. So we know, like jujitsu, he's using the power of the other guy to work for him. But I think in the end, he is an interesting character, although in many people's minds, a despicable one.
Do you disagree with the premise that the excessive coverage that Rex cites really is cable news and radio, more so than print, which is not to say that print is ignoring him or even that print is covering him more so than the other candidates? But I have a sense that if you want to learn about the other candidates in serious newspapers, you can find it out. You can find out about
in
them in serious newspapers.
I'll start you out. The New York Times. And then?
Well, I don't see every broadsheet newspaper in the country. I mean, we see the tabloids, which go to town on him. But the point is, and you just mentioned it, he's getting so much coverage to the detriment of the other candidates.
Including the Times, by the way.
Yeah, that is believed by many to be one of the reasons why his poll ratings are so high.
So
he is getting all of that publicity.
I don't think the campaign coverage has been excessive. I just think it's interesting, the tone of it. But I think he has a core of support, and that's why he's leading in the polls.
Who's
now.
Who's that core?
Well, that core is harshly conservative people who are really drawn to aggressive rhetoric, right?
You see, I don't agree with that. I think, Rex, he is a phenomena of the middle and even lower middle class. And the reason I say that is you got a lot of angry people in this country. Some for very good reasons. I mean, they're angry because, you know, they're not making enough money. The rich are getting richer. The poor are getting poorer. But what's always interested me in this country is that lower middle class group who are going to be the deciders in the presidential election and how angry they can get and how instead of saying, well, I want education for my kids or I want a more progressive health insurance for everybody, they say, you know, these people, and they become conservative mouths. And that is who I think he's got going for him. Look, Rex and Ira, he stands up and he says, the first thing out of his mouth is, I just want you to know I'm rich.
Right after he says he's how smart he is.
I'm rich. But it's brilliant because in this country, rich is our royalty. And he says, I'm rich. And then he says how much he's got. And by the way, the Times have been looking at this and says, maybe not. Or somebody's been looking at it and says, he said $10 billion. And maybe not. But it doesn't much matter. The Daily News, Ira, I just want to point this out. You dismissed it by saying the tabloids in New York. The Daily News and the New York Post are, of course, the two biggest papers in New York in terms of circulation, right? And they are united in their hatred of Trump. Every day.
On the editorial page.
No, on the front page, on the wood. Every day, you know, there is a Zuckerman, I think, probably, because he's the owner, inspired, basically, editorial content about what a fool he is. And we know now from a very good article in the New York Times that Murdoch doesn't like him either, and that Murdoch has a big problem because Roger Ailes, who is the head of his broadcasting operation, very successful, although I don't like him, operation, it likes Trump, but Murdoch, his boss, doesn't like him. And this is apparently a war of some of the titans.
But, you know, don't you think that the reason, I would say that it's not because of the political biases of the owner of the Daily News or of the Post, but rather that it's just really entertaining content that the tabloids put him on the front. They wouldn't put Donald Trump on the front page if it weren't that draws readers.
You could be right, but I think it's more than that, Rex. I think both of these owners hate him, and I think that's clear.
I mean, your initial question, I think, was, is he getting too much publicity or some variation thereof? And the question I have, I think he is getting too much publicity, but I don't blame the editors and the broadcast producers.
Could you do the same thing?
Yeah,
you know
I would
it.
Do the same thing. But here's the next question I would ask, which is, are all of these outlets that are giving him this excessive coverage for reasons that we just described doing a disservice to all of the other candidates? And is that are they fulfilling their obligation, they meaning the media, by not covering these others as well?
They wouldn't be covering them anyway. The New York newspapers wouldn't be giving huge play to all the people who are going around one place after another where
there are
primaries.
Because Trump is from New York? Or is Trump is a national
phenomenon? Because he's interesting. He's perfected over the years the art of getting publicity. And he's just now translating it into the political realm.
Sure. John Kasich is going to be on the front pages of all of these newspapers.
Wahoo.
What?
Let's hear it.
What? Ohio?
But let me again play devil's advocate. There are 15 other candidates seeking the Republican nomination?
Right.
And you can add up all of their coverage combined, and it will not come close to what Trump is getting. And my question is, are the media outlets doing a disservice to these others?
Okay, so the answer to your question, your self-serving question.
No, I posit it as a devil's advocate question.
Yes, right. There are days on this program that I think, okay, Ira, you went to a distinguished college. You graduated, and you've been honored many times by academic institutions. These are academic questions. Is the media?
Isn't that what we're here for?
Yeah, no, I know. But then there's, as I always say to my students, there's a big difference between what is and what ought to be. is you guys are putting those stories on the front page of the paper. Ought to be, yeah, sure, we're doing a disservice to the other candidates. But let's be real about this. That's what's going on.
So do you disagree then that
yes.
Trump's 20-plus percent approval rating in the poll, more than twice the second-place person, is because of the amount of coverage that he's getting?
Well, the question always is, where's the chicken and where's the egg? I don't know what came first. Trump came first. He's interesting. He's made himself interesting. He knows how to play the game. And the game is getting personal recognition. He's done that. He is a practitioner of the art of politics in the context of American politics.
Well, and here's a way to look at it. It is with the words of Barack Obama, who came to New York to tape a Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And he said, "What I'm most concerned about is not that it's unfair," referring to the media, "or too tough on government, but that it gets distracted by shiny objects and doesn't always focus on the big, tough choices and decisions." So now, is that true? Is that what's happening here? Is Trump a shiny object? The president said it's tough for folks to do an hour-long special in urban America, tough to get everyone focused the same way. The whole nation, he said, operates on sound bites. And I think this is a valid criticism, but sure. I think it's because the media reflect the reality of what interests people rather than, as you said, ought to be.
All I know is that CNN and this radio station, every time a president of the United States comes on, we carry their press conference. We do it because it's the right thing to do. We play the president's remarks every Saturday. I don't know who listens, but we do. And we play the Republican response every week because it is our responsibility to do so. We know about our responsibility, but we also know that people have a right to listen to what they want to listen to.
Yep. And folks generally choose to listen to gobbledygook. Well, folks generally choose to listen to music rather than to content programming of this sort, right?
Well, you know, the point about the shiny objects and whether a long-form television program would draw viewers, it's a different world today with so many channels and so many other places to get your information. I wonder whether the famous Edward R. Murrow, what was it called, Harvest of Shame?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder whether that would have anywhere near the impact today that it did, you know, 50 or 60 years ago when there were only three channels to watch on.
Yeah.
I would want to argue with Rex a little bit about his basic premise about Americans want music and not
substance.
Substance. So that this radio station, or all 28 of them that we have in our group, you know, we play Tanglewood, we play American Roots, we play jazz on the weekends. They don't begin to compare with the listenership that we have for our news programming.
Now, I'm talking about your audience compared to the rock stations, to Fly 92,
right. Well,
or, you know, country music. That's where I'm saying Americans are drawn to. They're drawn to entertainment, distraction, rather than to serious stuff.
But that really does speak to the American educational system and, you know, and what we've got. So that I remember two characters who used to have a radio show around here, and they finally got sued because they used to have something called the Ugly Bride.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Mm-hmm. And they would pick out the ugliest bride they thought and make fun of her, you know, on their radio show.
They pick pictures out of the newspaper.
Yes,
yeah.
And I suspect people listen because of that garbage.
Yeah.
And
were they on in the morning?
They were in the morning.
Yeah, well, that's the typical morning shock jock, IMUS or the Howard Stern syndrome.
And what always gets those guys, by the way, and it is a Media Project show that we're doing here, but what always gets them is that in order to compete, they have to give more and more red meat compared to their competitors. So they will do something that will either get them sued, or they will say something racist or terribly sexist, and that's the end of them.
And the owners say, "I'm shocked, shocked to hear that there is nastiness going on in our airwaves." Right. This is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith here, coming to you from Albany, New York. We need to talk about, speaking of shocking content, Gawker is a web presence. Gawker has been a tremendously successful digital site. With now a couple hundred employees. This started about 5 years ago as three guys sitting in the living room of Dick Denton, the founder of Gawker. Now Gawker, the executive editor and the editor of its flagship website, have resigned after controversy over an article. Now, we have two questions here. One is the appropriateness of the article, and second, over how it was handled.
But could you, Rex, just one more thing that would be helpful in terms of our background for old people like me, and that is Gawker is not exactly the New York Times.
Yeah, well, don't they traffic in rumors? And
exactly.
Like, yeah.
This is exactly, they've been very proud of the fact that what they have put up there is unmitigated wildness, that they post everything about anybody. They're willing to post stuff that other people won't. Rumors about celebrities, even.
But I wanted to say something, and that is that there are several of these supermarket tabloids and others, right, Ira and Rex, that figure that being sued is part of the expense of running their newspaper.
That's something that's sometimes true. This doesn't involve a lawsuit. This involves an article that they posted in which they outed a prominent, a rather prominent individual as being gay, claimed that this guy had unsuccessfully tried to hire a male escort.
Which this guy denies and says is not true, which means when somebody calls you and says it's not true or puts you out there, that there's always the potential for a lawsuit, my point indeed.
Ah, I see. I see. So this is the question. Was it appropriate for them to
yank it,
to out this guy? And then what happened was the publisher, the owner, majority owner of the site, Nick Denton, ordered it pulled down after there was a hullabaloo about it. What is interesting to me is that these editors didn't quit over what seems to me to be a terrible decision to out somebody who is not out himself. Uh-huh. This guy is married and has kids, but they resigned because they were ticked off at their publisher for pulling down the content.
Can I just say a couple of things? First of all, this is very interesting to me because Rex and Ira, I know that you're very aware that we are not in a time where if you put something in the newspaper, it was in the newspaper.
Uh-huh.
Now, it may be in the newspaper, but it's also online. And if somebody demands it gets taken down, you can always make it up. In other words, as opposed to the old days, it was in the newspaper, that was it, goodbye, so long. Now you can take it down, and the demand always is you take it offline.
Well, I would argue then I would be on the side of the editors, not in there running the article to begin with, but that once the article was posted, I would not take it down. It's already out there. Your analogy is what I was going to make. If it was in print, if it was wrong, if it was horrendous, nevertheless, it's there. You can't take it back. Now, technically, you can take it back if it's online, but I would argue it's already in the public domain and it should not be taken down. If they feel that the article should not have been published for whatever reason, then you run an editor's note that explains what it's up there, but it's already in the public domain.
Well, let's.
I'm sure you've had phone calls from people saying,
my
name was in the police beat, take it down. It's not an accurate story.
All the time. It's a nuanced decision, but here there is something that we do in some certain instances. We can adjust something digitally so that it is not searchable by Google. So that if there was a nasty article about Ira Fussfeld did something when he was 22 years old, that was stupid, and now you're 42, and you say, you know, I can't get a job because it has me, selling pot outside the Grateful Dead concert. You did that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
We will actually make it so that it's not the spiders crawling
but
web.
The initial,
can't search
if,
it.
If other people may have already printed out, I mean, the article is already in circulation.
And we don't remove something from our digital archives so that if you do go into the archives and you know what you're searching for, you can find it. And we, of course, never change something that's on the e-edition. The facsimile of our paper that exists.
Wait a second. First of all, there are a couple of things here. One is, let's say somebody complains and you look at it and you say, well, you know, maybe this isn't right.
Yeah.
I mean, that
we
that's
we a, attach that's, a correction to it.
Yeah, that's
the problem with that is that raises it once again in the Google search criteria.
Sure, but what if the guy, Rex, I'm sorry for interrupting, but what if the guy demands that you take it down?
They do all the time,
right.
And we say,
well, then you say, well, we don't want to take it down because it just raises the visibility in the Google edition. That gets kind of complicated. But then there's a second thing here. It so happens that the Hearst Corporation, your corporation, has a lot of money, and therefore you have and always have had a lot of integrity. And you
that
have
doesn't
enough,
always connect.
A lot of money. No, but what I mean is
Hearst has a good reputation.
Independence.
Yeah, they do, and they also have enough money to pay a lawyer.
Lots of lawyers.
There are newspapers, and we've been talking about them off mic here, that are on their last filament of enamel on the teeth. And if they get hit with a major lawsuit,
correct,
they've got to come up with a lot of money to defend that lawsuit. It's one of the things I think is the worst thing about American justice. I know a couple of guys with a lot of money who should be sued for the lies they tell. I'm not going to sue him. Where am I going to get $1 million to go sue some guy? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the reverse of that is, where are you going to get enough money to defend yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if the publication corrects something, its exposure is less than if it willy-nilly
Correct.
Says, no, we stand by our story.
Well, that's my point. Yeah. My point is, I have known people who have taken stuff down simply because it's the easier way
to
do it.
Well, I think that you're taking down from the web. Yeah,
yes.
I mean, but again, this is another one of those. The web is a relatively new means of transmission, and I think we don't have a unanimity of views on that. I think that once it's up in the domain, it stays up, and then you update it with corrections if necessary. I'm interested in what Rex was describing about Google, because I didn't know that could be done. But you're also saying you're not going to take it down from your digital archive.
We're not going to delete something that is true, that was published, that we know to be true. Now, here is an interesting issue on this, too. The editor of Gawker, who now has departed, Max Reed, described the deletion ordered by his publisher as, quote, unacceptable and unprecedented breach of the editorial firewall. Now, I just have to wonder about that. I'll tell you the truth. I don't know that there is such a thing, really, as an editorial firewall.
Between a publisher and an editor.
You know, it seems to me that we honor this. That is, we say, if you're an advertiser, you can't influence the content
Sure.
in our news coverage. We're not subject to that kind of persuasion. But the editorial firewall, my goodness, if you own the publication, you have a right to decide what you publish,
If
don't
you're Rupert Murdoch or if you're Mort Zuckerman, you're in charge.
Right.
And I have to say that on my little newspaper, the Legislative Gazette, I have been approached many times by the editor saying, what should we do here?
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm saying that there are, that you suffer the consequences of that if, as in Ira's years as publisher of the Daily Freeman, if he would order his editors to do this story or not do that story because of a commercial consideration, then the editor could either do it or not, and Ira could suffer the consequences to his newspaper's reputation for that kind of action, but it is entirely the publisher's right to decide.
Exactly. Well,
and always has been.
Yeah.
But what has changed in the last decade or so is there is more interaction, I dare say, between the editorial department and the advertising department and the circulation department on what the editorial department could be doing to help them generate more revenue.
Because
that's certainly true.
And I think that the firewall that you described is...
But wait, is it the firewall between advertising and editorial?
Is less of a firewall than it used to be.
I agree with
but
you.
But the firewall never existed,
not
in my view,
radio.
Between editorial and the publisher.
Yeah, no.
The publisher is supposed to represent...
Publisher's the boss.
And represents the interests of the entire product.
Sure.
And as Rex alluded, if a publisher has integrity at a time, certainly before these current days when money was easier coming in the door, the publisher didn't want advertising to be interfering with editorial
Sure.
because of the integrity factor.
But you and I have been best friends, or best of friends, let's put it that way, Ira, for years.
Well, there's
years.
A minute and 30 to
right.
go.
Now we're going to debate
best
that.
Best of friends for years. But I know, because I've talked to you
yes.
over the years, you know, in camera, off,
yes.
that you've been challenged when some advertiser comes along and says, you know, I got caught doing something
Absolutely.
Bad.
Absolutely.
You know.
There was. I remember telling your classes that
yeah.
we had a classic case in our community of a major advertiser. The patriarch was arrested. They didn't want a major arrest. They didn't want us to run stories about it, threatening that we would lose the advertising. We lost the advertising. And I'm not going to tell you it didn't hurt. It was a considerable amount of money. But you have to.
He also came back, didn't he?
They came back after a fashion.
Yeah, we have a huge advertiser who is currently not in our pages because he was upset about a particular mm-hmm. story, but it was a true story.
Was it a supermarket?
No, it's huge. Yeah. Anyway, so we've had this conversation. In camera was that great term, and usually Dr. Shartok, of course, speaks ex cathedra, but nevertheless, that's enough. That's my. I'm just throwing a little Latin around to show that you're not just because you're the only guy in the room with a PhD.
You graduated first in your class at Columbia Journalism School.
So there we go.
So you have a lot of
I want to commend
stuff.
The readers to read Newsweek online and the story, this cultural analysis, The Summer of Trump NATO. You'll get a big kick out of it.
Yes, a great thing by John Walters. So, this is The Media Project, the publisher, the professor, and the editor. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding,
They all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild.